Hallo jazzvrienden en vriendinnen, welkom bij aflevering 6 van de Jazz is een podcast. Ik ben Code Kloet en vandaag neem ik je mee naar 10 juli 1998. Dat was een vrijdag en uiteraard met die datum denk je gelijk aan het North Sea Jazz Festival. Michel Petrucciani met zijn sextet speelde in Den Haag en het was een all-star bezetting. Naast Petrucciani op piano uiteraard, bassist Anthony Jackson, Steve Gadd op drums, Flavio Boltro trompet en flugelhorn, Stefano Di Battista alto sopraan sax en Dennis Leloup trombone. Het was allemaal in het kader van een nieuwe plaat die hij ging promoten. Daarover hoor je hem zometeen, want ik kreeg Michel Petrucciani te spreken. Ik deed een interview met hem voor televisie. Dat staat trouwens ook op YouTube, als je het nog een keer wil zien ook. En het was een bijzonder gesprek, om meerdere redenen. A, het was natuurlijk geweldig om Petrucciani te ontmoeten. B, ik had tussen de regels door wel een instructie meegekregen om één onderwerp even niet te bespreken. Want er was een behoorlijke rel geweest. Want de organisatie die had Michel Petrucciani gevraagd of zij een sticker van een bepaald pianomerk op zijn piano mochten plakken, omdat dat ene pianomerk de sponsor was van het festival. Een van de sponsoren. En de piano waarop Petrucciani speelde, zijn eigen piano niet. Nou ja, ik vind het toch eigenlijk best een aardig onderwerp om zo even over te hebben. Hoe ga ik dat aanvliegen? Nou, na ongeveer 6 minuten deed ik een beetje alsof ik niet precies wist of hij nog wel op een eigen piano speelde. Wat natuurlijk een beetje gek is als je weet om wie het gaat. Maar het kwam toch op tafel. Een beetje een dreigement van zijn kant zat er ook in. Zo van, als dit of dat niet geregeld is, speel ik hier misschien nooit meer. En dat was een beetje creepy, want het jaar erop overleed hij. En het was dus inderdaad de laatste keer dat hij North Sea deed. We hadden het ook over de Steinway uiteraard. En over het doel in zijn leven steeds beter te worden in wat je doet. We bespraken ook het verschil tussen het opnemen van een cd en hoe de band klinkt na een tournee, dat hij dan eigenlijk zo'n cd wil weggooien en hem helemaal opnieuw maken, omdat die band zo goed ingespeeld is. Maar we begonnen met een onderwerp dat hij fascinerend vindt, namelijk het begrip kleur. Hij haalde ook Messiaen nog even aan. Ik vroeg hem dan ook hoe hij zijn kleuren kiest, als componist, als een soort audioschilder. Dit is Michel Petrucciani.
You don't choose your colors. I think it's I must say first that I am not the first one to have this kind of vision. Olivier Messiaen was also a visionary of colors. But it's like he explained it himself, it's more a sensation. They're musical colors, more than colors as a painter. You could see like red, blue, green, purple, gray, or whatever. But it's not actual colors. It's things that moves with times, and it's just a feeling, you know? They're either cozy or cold, or gray or black, white, you know? And it's, if it's black and white, it's kind of cold, you know, it's not very warm. If you have like a lot of red, it's fiery, and yellow and brown, and it's kind of warm and cozy. It's a feeling. It really is. It's a feeling. It's difficult to describe. You can't say, okay, I'm going to do a painting, because I'm not a painter. I'm just trying to be a musician, you know. And when you write for certain feelings. First, I write for people I work with. So if I have a record, I think of having Steve Gadd, Anthony Jackson, and a horn section like Stefano Flavio and Stefano Di Battista, Flavio Boltro, and Denis Leloup or Bob Brookmeyer. I think I write for them because I know the way they play, and I just think, well, that Steve would like to play on that, and Anthony will enjoy doing the chord changes on this or finding new ideas on this particular piece.
You seem to establish yourself more and more as a composer. When you are writing for people, as you just described, actually you're already in a sort of conversation with them.
Yeah, I mean, I have a... it's almost like a little bit of a defect, you know. I like to work in a hurry. Sometimes I have a lot of time, and I say, well, you know, I wait, and sometimes about a week to a month before I'm ready for a project, I start doing everything, you know, because it excites me. If I have too much time, somehow I'm not as excited. So I try to first reunite all the musicians, all the people that I want to work with, and then I write for them. After they say okay.
Then you have written for them, then you take the music to them, and you start communicating all
then
over
again.
Then
I take the music to them, and then they rehearse, then we rehearse together, then we record. And then we record, and then we do the record, and we start doing a tour. And then when we tour, after a year, I want to erase the record and do another one, because it's 10 times better, which is what's happening now. I mean, the Both World is a very nice record, and I can't say it's not a good record. But the live performance now, after a year and a half of playing together, a year, because we did in August.
Yeah,
after a year of playing together, I must say that it's much better.
How
it's different. It changes.
Yeah.
The compositions and the music, when you write a piece of music, it's like you have a child. And all the babies almost look alike, you know?
Yeah.
When you go to the nursery and you see babies like that, you go, well, you know, they're all very beautiful, but it's kind of difficult to be 100% certain that this one is yours, you know? And with the music, it's the same. You write a piece, and the piece doesn't have yet its own identity, really.
So in your case, it's a baby that is being created by six people instead of two, huh?
Right. Well, it's a baby that has been created... it's a united project in a way. And now it's really growing. It's becoming really its own identity.
Like babies growing up, sometimes they turn out something different than parents have thought or wished or maybe expected.
That's because they have a brain. In that case, it's still my brain. So as long as I don't turn bad, everything will be okay.
I want to go back to the colors. You play as a pianist on all kind of different instruments. You're not a pianist who carries his own instrument with him all the time. Do you develop...
That's not true.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's not true. I carry my instrument with me.
So you always play on the same piano?
Yes.
But not here?
Yes, here too.
Oh, here too?
Yeah. Which is interesting. I mean, it's a big conflict with the festival because they're sponsored by Yamaha.
Yeah.
And I play Steinway. And I brought my Steinway piano. And they say, well, you know, can we put a sticker on the Steinway? And
a Yamaha
put
sticker.
Put a Yamaha on it. And I said, no.
No.
Because otherwise I will have problems because I work with Steinway. So I think they made some adjustments. And if they didn't, maybe I'll never play this festival again.
No.
Maybe it's the last time, so please come, because I'll never be back here.
What is the characteristic and the love that you have for a Steinway?
Well, Steinway piano is the best pianos in the world. I mean, there's no... I do like Yamaha. They're nice instruments. But it's just in terms of the tradition... it's hundreds of years, you know, of knowledge and care. And I mean, I'm not here to sell you the image of Steinway, but
no.
it's like the difference between a Rolls Royce and a motorcycle. It's just two different things, you know. Yamaha is good, but it's fresher, it's newer, younger. And Steinway is more like
an institute.
An institution, yes, an institution, really.
My last question, you are probably going to play also pieces from both worlds.
Everything.
Everything from both
almost,
worlds?
Almost, yeah.
If you look at your set list, could you pick out a favorite?
You know, I've talked to you about my children, and it's like, you know, they're all different, you know. My grandmother used to say about kids, she says, we have five fingers in one hand, but they're all different, you know. And my songs are the same, and they come from the same sources. And I have a hard time to say which one I like the most. I tell you the truth, I think that I could do better the next time. I think they're okay. I like my songs. I like the work we did here, and I just hope that next year I come up with better ideas and better music, which is basically my goal in life. You know, it's to grow every year, to get better every year. And this is good group. This is a great band, probably the best band I ever had. And sometimes I like color more. Sometimes I prefer to play Brazilian like. Sometimes I prefer to play. I have a better time with Chloe Miss Gershwin. I mean, it depends of the evening and also the way I feel. And so I don't really have any preferences. I just think that they're all good or they're all bad. I mean, it's as you like them, you know, as you wish.
Michel Petrucciani. Tot zover deze Jazz is een podcast deel 6. Misschien vind je het leuk om te reageren. Dat kan via info@jazzism.nl. info@jazzism.nl. Daar kun je ook meer informatie krijgen over het feit dat mijn programma Co-Live terugkomt. Het is een jaartje weg geweest door allerlei omroepperikelen. Maar we gaan verder vanaf januari op de concertzender. Elke zaterdagavond van 9 tot 10. En daarna natuurlijk ook terug te beluisteren. En ik ga doen wat je van me gewend bent. Jazz in de breedste zin des woords, met een accent op Nederlandse jazz en natuurlijk bijzondere out-of-the-box projecten. En, wie weet, zien we elkaar binnenkort ook weer in Nick Vollebrecht. Nou ja, alle reden om te blijven luisteren. Blijf Jazzism lezen en blijf reageren via info@jazzism.nl. Mijn naam is Code Kloet. Zeg ik alleen nog, gedag allemaal.